I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105 through the Fan. We're live from Uncle Julio's in Frisco, 2401 Preston Road. It is also Shout Out Friday. I don't know how well that's going to go today, but we will give it a shot. Right now, we bring on Dallas Cowboys insider for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram and man who likes to move in the middle of the biggest Cowboys story in years. It is Nick Harris. Good morning, sir.
How are y'all doing? Yeah, I feel like my life is kind of an effed up version of the Truman Show sometimes, and yesterday was certainly a nutshell of that.
You're not doing a bit, and I know you posted the picture. Can you explain to people, did you in fact have a moving van at the Star yesterday for this press conference?
I did. Of course, I picked the perfect time to move houses this week. I wrote two articles on the floor of my empty kitchen yesterday, and then the news came down, and I was like, boy, oh boy, I am not moving today. But I already had my entire U-Haul loaded up, and then I get the news that the press conference is happening. I was like, I don't have a choice. I got to drive this U-Haul to the Star. So I'm flying this U-Haul 65 miles per hour down Sam Rayburn Tollway in the pouring rain. And, yeah, I parked it out front, and I was live to tell another day. I'll say that.
and he got a significant question in the conversation. He got multiple questions yesterday.
Did you think about asking a follow-up question that, Jerry, do you know it's Micah Parsons and not Michael Parsons?
Yeah, that one always gets me. That one always tickles me whenever he says Michael. And then Steven leaning over to him is like, hey, it's Micah. Just letting you know, like 3 months too late.
Now, I saw some of your tweets in the aftermath of the trade, and I certainly understand them. And I want to get back to the value of it all in just a minute. But before that, can you give us a Cliff's Notes version of how really did we get here?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I'm going to try to give you the Cliff Notes as best as I can, but it is an extensive ordeal. I mean, we can go back to a couple of years ago. This was first kicked around the front office back in the offseason leading into 2024, and it was like, man, imagine the return we could get on Micah Parsons. That was more so the idea that was brought up, and it was like, he gives us headaches in practice. He has a lackadaisical approach to how he prepares. Sure, he shows up on Sundays, but he's not a good example for the guys around him. You know, he kind of has some guys following in his footsteps. We don't like that necessarily. And, you know, Jerry Jones had a conversation with him leading into last season, and I give Micah a lot of credit because I did think he took a step forward when it came to his maturity last season. You know, you think about when things were really going down the gutter last year, Micah Parsons is one of the big voices in that locker room, you know, saying, hey, we still want to win games. You know, we still have a chance here up until the very end when they didn't. And so, you know, I do give him credit for that. And then going into the offseason, you know, I think this is probably the most misunderstood thing about this situation is that Jerry Jones and Micah Parsons had a really good relationship. Jerry has said it multiple times. He only has about three or four players over the course of his entire career as owner and GM of the Cowboys that has his personal phone number, and Micah Parsons was one of them. He called him multiple times to set up meetings and just talk. You know, the Cotton Bowl was one of them. I was actually disappointed coming out of the Cotton Bowl because they didn't really talk about anything substantial. They just talked about life, and, you know, the leadership was addressed that night as well, but it was nothing, you know, too extensive. And then the meeting on March 18th at the Star, that was the turning point in this whole entire situation. You know, the meeting was called to talk about leadership for Micah Parsons, and it's been disputed by both sides who actually brought up contract stuff first, but both sides did engage in contract negotiations. They agreed on a certain number, 5 years, $202.5 million, and, you know, the report that Nick Eatman had on your guys' airways this morning saying that the five-year 202 may include his fifth-year option and maybe don't, but regardless, he was going to be the highest-paid non-quarterback in league history. He was going to get the second-most guaranteed money in league history, only behind Deshaun Watson. That was the deal that was on the table. And Michael Parsons called Steven back the next day, and you know, worked out a little bit more parameters, and they're like, you know what, we agree on this. And Micah said, all right, let's loop in the agent. And Jerry was like, why are we going to do that? We've already negotiated this. We agree on it. All the agent is going to try to do is mess up this negotiation. And that is where things went sour. And both sides felt manipulated in this situation. And because they had such a strong relationship, I think this is why it soured so bad. We just got done watching the Gambler and his Cowboys Netflix show. We see what happens when Jerry Jones feels disrespected by someone he considers a close friend in Jimmy Johnson. Yeah. That is very similar to what happened here. I think Bobby Belt has made that point on your guys' airways as well. It's a really fascinating point because that is how close Micah and Jerry got, if you go back to that March 18th meeting, that was how close their relationship was at that point. And so I think both of them met their match when it came to stubbornness, because it became a stonewall at that point for about 5-6 months, and being like, okay, is Jerry going to pick up the phone and call the agent, or is Micah just going to agree upon what they agreed upon back in March? And neither of them did it. And then when disrespectful comments started to fly in from both sides, you look at the introductory press conference, and then the next day, Micah Parsons makes his comments. Things got really messy by the end of it. But the turning point as far as the last week goes, the Cowboys did not have an intention of trading Micah Parsons when he requested the trade on August 1st. That changed whenever he started to line up tactics to not play in week one. That was, he was medically cleared to play with his back tightness or whatever you call it. By the way, I think his back is healed these days.
It's a miracle!
We all understand. It happens.
Amazing medicine. But I think the back tightness situation, he was trying to find a doctor that would tell him he can't play in week one so that he could still get paid for week one and technically hold out at the same time. The grievance that was filed against his contract, you know, there was potential language in there that, you know, could have allowed him to potentially not play in week one and still get paid. Those tactics were starting to line up. I think the Cowboys saw.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All those tactics lining up, and they said, you know what, enough is enough. We have some really good offers on the table. We've already talked about the headache that he's brought here. Let's go ahead and engage with one and get this deal done, and that's the reality we sit in.
All right, Nick, yesterday multiple times during the press conference, Jerry Jones said that he thinks this is in the best interest of the team to make this move. And I know there's a variety of reasons he could be saying that, but do you believe he means the best interest of the team right now or in the future?
I think he meant both. It's no secret. This team needed a run stopper. And the defensive tackle position on this team is easily the worst room in the entire league at the one tech spot. And Mozzie Smith, you know, not living up to his first round billing, that was really kind of the first domino in this whole ordeal. What's the meme where it's like the domino falls and then the house falls at the end? The first domino was Mozzie Smith not panning out. Jerry said in the press conference yesterday, he said, unless it was a team with a premier defensive tackle ready to hand to us, we were not going to get a deal done. We were looking for a premier defensive tackle. So that was the root of the return and the root of how he feels that they're better now than they were yesterday. They still feel really good about this edge room. I've talked to a couple of people in the last 24 hours, like, hey, Donovan Ezeraku, we feel damn good about him. Dante Fowler's coming off of a double-digit sack season. He's looked good in camp. Sam Williams, I think, is still to be determined, and I think some people in the building probably feel that way too. We'll see how he starts the year. But they feel confident in that edge room, paired with now Kenny Clark, that they can get pressure, and now they can also stop the run. They feel like that is how that they're better now. In the future, they have 4 first-round picks. They can either move those and move up in a draft or go get another guy. Shoot, they have over $40 million in cap space right now. They have some flexibility to do some things. It's just how they allocate these resources. That's going to be the big deal, man, because if, let's say that they use these 2 first-round picks and they're used on a Mozzie Smith and a Taco Charlton. Yeah. Man, this is going to look like a bad trade in hindsight. But if they use those 2 picks on a Tyler Smith and, a Zach Martin, I don't know, I'm just kind of talking out of my butt here, then it's going to look pretty good, you know? So, it's to be seen how, who exactly wins this trade, but the Cowboys are confident that they are better now and that they can allocate these resources better in the future to be better in the future.
And when you're talking about the resources from a draft pick standpoint, I definitely understand that, but also $18 million cap hit, give or take, because I know the grievance is still lingering with Kenny Clark this year. And then going forward, I don't believe he has any guaranteed money on that deal, right? So it also seems like, and you mentioned the salary cap number, but the financial flexibility built in along with the draft picks feels pretty substantial.
Yeah, and I'm actually trying to pull up the numbers right now as far as Kenny Clark's cap hit this year. It is significantly lower than
$2.3 million.
Part of it. Yeah, the Packers had already paid Kenny Clark $8.2 million this season, so the cap hit is only $2.3 million for the Cowboys this year. It's and none of Clark's future years are guaranteed.
Exactly.
So it is it's a flexible contract that they can work with, and again, they have that flexibility to move around as soon as today.
What do you know about Kenny Clark as the player? Because I went and watched what I could of him last night, and then I looked at some stats and was like, man, Matt Eberflus had to have known about him. Like, he had to have known how good he was, having gone up against him for three straight years, and he did damage against the Bears.
Absolutely, and he was asked in his first eight seasons to be this upfield, you know, attack type of defensive tackle, and man, he got sack production involved with that. You go back to his 2023 year, 7.5 sacks, Pro Bowl season, and was a premier run stopper. I was diving into the nuances of his film yesterday and kind of a rabbit hole, and man, he gets his get off is elite. And when you talk about defensive tackles, his run stopping is quite solid as well. Now you look to last year, and I think he was asked to do some different things. I think he was asked to play a little bit more laterally. You know, that's something we'll be able to ask him for sure today. But you see him playing more laterally last year, and you wonder if that was maybe, you know, coaching or if that was a personal decision. But nevertheless, you know, his sack production took a hit as a result of that. But you factor in Matt Eberflus and what he's talked about. He wants to have an attack front. Mm-hmm. He wants his guys to get after the quarterback. I think it's going to benefit Kenny Clark in getting back to what his sack production looked like in 22-23. As far as his run-stopping ability, you know, he's got it. I mean, he's got the 315-pound plus frame that can certainly work in those A and B gaps quite well. And just a funny note that I think is hilarious in all of this: this is the third defensive tackle now on the roster that went to UCLA. And so him, Osa Digizua, and Jay Toy are all Bruins.
Well, as long as we still got Mozzie, you know what I'm saying? I know you already mentioned
three
that.
Three UCLA guys to overcome one Michigan guy.
So was there any point yesterday where you thought the biggest story was going to be we picked up Trevor Keegan off of waivers from the Eagles, and you're like, hey, I'll write a little something about that?
Yeah, poor Ryan Flannoy, because I mean, talking about the news dump of the century, and that was tough for him. I was funny. We were joking in the press conference yesterday. He's like, all right, who's going to be the guy to ask Jerry about why they waived Ryan Flannoy today?
Oh man, nobody did either.
So. Now, do you think that the Cowboys, is there any part that they got upset that Kelsey and Swift were getting too much run from NFL fans, and they're like, we got to do something?
And then they tried to show him up last night in the Cincinnati
game.
I'll tell you what, those headlines have gone away, haven't they? If that was the plan, it worked. I'll say that.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate the time, especially when you're in the midst of the story, in the midst of moving. Hopefully in a week or so, you can look back and take a deep breath.
Oh, man, I'm looking at a living room full of boxes right now. There's no such thing as a deep breath, but I appreciate you, fellas.
There you go.
Thank you very much. There you go, Nick Harris from the Fort Worth Star-Telegram right here on 105.3 The Fan. Don't worry, because coming up next, well, actually, you probably should worry, because it's time for Baseball Nuggets. Why do the baseball injury gods hate the Rangers?
They do.
We'll do it live from Uncle Julio's in Frisco, 2401 Preston Road, right here on The Fan.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.